You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
All right, football fans, we got the phone lines there for you. Talking Super Bowls, your all-time favorite Super Bowls, most of which I can't remember. But Jim's got the list in front of him here.
Why can't you remember them, Bob?
I don't know. I just don't commit them to memory. Specifics about the games, I don't really commit to memory. I'm just not a guy who can recite plays to you. I can do it with fights for some reason, but yeah. But games, I just...
You can do it with every...
Certain
like fight. MMA fights?
No, not everyone. Just certain fights.
Yeah.
Yeah. But... Yeah, Super Bowls, it just, you know, people will, again, recite certain plays or not even winning plays. Like, oh, remember that pass in the second quarter when he dove out of bounds? I'm like, no, I don't.
You know, the one between the Panthers and the Patriots?
Yes.
That was the...
Janet Jackson.
That sucked up all of my memory of the entire game.
Yeah, and I was at that game.
That's all I remember.
That was a really good game. It was a defensive first half, like that nobody could get anything done, and then it just exploded offense second half, like back and forth.
Wasn't there a kickoff that went out of bounds in that one?
Yes, yeah. That kind of saved the Patriots at the end.
Okay, see, I remember
New England
that.
Won 32-29.
Yeah, I was in the stands for that.
It's a good
I was
one.
Watching that whole thing. But anyway, all right, phone lines are there for you. 421-3776. Toll free, 866-979-3776. Your favorite Super Bowl. Best game in your opinion. Should we omit the Seahawks? Is everybody going to say the Seahawks win?
Yeah, probably. Outside of the Seahawks.
Outside of the Seahawks, just smacking the daylights out of the Broncos. Which is your favorite of all Super Bowls? And then before we get to the phone calls, Dave, what was yours? Did you tell us?
My favorite?
Yeah, your favorite Super Bowl.
I have a lot of memories about, and I'll have to look up which one it was. I know it was in 1976. It was the Super Bowl where the Raiders beat the Vikings, and it was in the Rose Bowl. And I just remember Willie Brown returning that interception and the slow motion. Like
that's the one you were just showing me, right?
Yeah, I just showed you. Yep. That one, to me, as a little kid, I just thought, and I always have loved like Southern California football in the later part of the year with the long shadows and the way the sun shines. That just reminded me of football and growing up in California. You know, that was I think the most like iconic for me as a kid.
See, Jim likes a nice snowstorm. He likes to see snow coming down, right?
That's your thing. Boy, the Seahawks, that game back in New York, that was pretty close, wasn't it?
Yeah,
because you guys had a hard time getting out of there the next day.
Yeah, right. That was really cold.
It was like 24 hours later, and yeah, that – the snow just started coming down. But anyway, yeah, that one, you know, obviously the Seahawks ones, yeah, we'll take those out. But I really liked that one. I have pretty good memories of the one with the Niners when they won. They beat Cincinnati. And that was in, like, what, 1985, something like that? It was actually
earlier,
even
right?
Earlier than that. It was 1982.
82.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
What about you, Jim? Which is your favorite?
Well, I have one that stands out for a negative reason, but my favorite one, and maybe we can get to the negative one here in a second, but my favorite one goes all the way back to 1969. I can still picture Joe Namath sitting on this Chase lounge by the pool, and reporters were gathered around.
Did you like him, or do you think he was a big
Yeah, I like Joe Namath. Broadway Joe? Yeah, he was cool.
I'm curious how he was perceived by people, like, oh, shut this big mouth up, because
he
was so out of the ordinary. It was you just didn't have that. Obviously, back then.
Yeah, I got the feeling that people kind of liked him, though. Yeah, okay. he was, I mean, he wasn't, in today's day and age, he wouldn't be considered outspoken.
No, he'd be a blip on the radar.
But at that time, like I was saying earlier, Green Bay had won the first two Super Bowls, the AFL and NFL coming together, I think in 66, the 66 season. And then the Jets were the first AFL team or AFC team to finally beat the old staid NFL, and they beat Baltimore 16-7, and it was really cool though, because the Jets were, I think, 19-point underdogs or something like that, and he guaranteed that they were going to win, and they went out and did it.
My dad won $5 off of Larry Potts.
Larry Potts.
Yeah. Oh, someone that he bet.
One of his coworkers. Yeah. I mean, he was all in on the Jets. You guys remember seeing some of the halftime show for the first couple Super Bowls were like high school bands.
Yeah.
Was it high school bands?
Not I even believe there bands, there huh? was. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, it was. And then there's always that picture of the guy with the jetpack flying around like he's so futuristic.
Yeah, that's how we were all going to be traveling.
That was part of one of the halftime shows.
All right, let's head to the phone lines. Let's begin in Seattle. Pharrell is with us. What's going on, man? Which game do you have?
Hey, this is Terrell, man.
Oh, I thought they said Pharrell. My bad.
Nah, man. This is Terrell, man. Your black nephew, man. You feel me? Hey, man. I'm going to have to go with the helmet catch outside of the Seahawks win, man. I'm telling you that the helmet catch and then the double move Plaxico gave your boy Hobbs or whatever his name was at the corner for the game-winning touchdown. But also, it was also a monumental game, too, because that was, like, the only Super Bowl that Seahawks had a chance to win. But then a few years later, you know, that tragedy. But that was probably my favorite of all time.
All right. Good stuff, man. Appreciate it. There's Terrell. And I got to tell you, that game, I rooted. That's as hard as I rooted for a team that wasn't my favorite team. I was at that game as well, and my co-host at the time was a huge Giants fan from New York. You know, so he had a vested interest in it. So I was rooting for him, but I just hated the Patriots so much. They were on the verge of an undefeated season. And then for that play to happen and for them to pull out that win, I felt like my team won. Like
Giants, were they a wild card team that year? Did they come in through that way?
I think the wild card year was the next Super Bowl, wasn't it? When they beat the Packers, who were 15-1.
Right. Well,
I think. I'm pretty sure.
And I think, hadn't the Giants lost to the Patriots earlier that year? On this one, or maybe that's
in the undefeated. I can't remember.
Maybe it's the other one, but yeah, it was that catch. And again, Mike Carey, being the official, the head official on that game, let the in the grasp go on Eli Manning. He let him play, and it looked like a couple of times. And when you go back and look at that, it's hard to figure out how does Eli get out of that, or how
do you think they would have called it now?
I would hope not. I would hope that they would have just let the guys play.
With the way they protect quarterbacks, though, don't you feel like they would have said, all right, that play's dead.
What a shame, though, right?
I mean, you would have – just think if the one of the most miraculous plays in Super Bowl history wouldn't have existed.
Right.
If they would have said, no, blown the play dead.
So that's why I always say I would much rather see a no call. And I know everybody's complaining about the NFC Championship game, but still, and that was, you know, that was a pretty bad one, but
that was beyond egregious. But still,
I'll take those if I'm going to get the Tyree helmet catch.
Well, and that play was probably the difference between Eli Manning making it into the Hall of Fame and not.
Yeah, because he became MVP,
And then MVP again in the next Super Bowl that he won. Let's head to Bellevue. John is with us. Hello, John.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good, man. What game do you got?
Well, if it's allowed, I got the Patriots Seahawks game. If it's not, that's cool too.
No, it's not. We were just eliminating the Seahawks win over the Broncos because as Seahawks fans, everybody would pick that. So you're allowed to pick that. And I think go ahead.
I love that game. I think that was easily the best Super Bowl I've seen. From a perspective of just, you know, watching it as a independent observer as opposed to a fan. As a fan, of course, I didn't like the ending, but, you know, the game, we had so many, the Seahawks had so many injuries in the first half, Lane, I think he broke his leg or something like that. By the fourth quarter, you know, we're 14 points up and, you know, half our team's hurt. Bennett gets hurt, you know,
Cliff Avril got
Brady
knocked out of that
back.
One.
Right, exactly. And Brady just, you know, he comes back and throws passes that most quarterbacks wouldn't even think of trying to throw, and gets them back in the game. You know, the whole deal at the end, well, you know, what are you going to do? Belichick doesn't call that timeout. You know, you guys were talking about that earlier, and I saw him talk about that. And he said that he looked out on the field, and he thought the Seahawks looked confused, and that's why he didn't call timeout. Now, whether that's BS or not, I don't know, but that's what he said.
Well, you tend to trust him. Appreciate the phone call, John. Thanks so much. That opens up a line at 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Yeah, pretty much anything Belichick does, even if it looks like a mistake, you're going, there's a method to his madness. Yeah. Right? I mean,
he's kind of earned that, right?
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. But he mentioned the Jeremy Lain thing, and I'm glad he brought that up because that was one of the uglier snapped forearms I've ever seen.
And didn't he tear the ligament?
He didn't find two injuries on one play.
He didn't find out until like 2 or 3 weeks after that, or maybe it was even a month that he was in the grocery store and his knee was like moving and he went in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so he went and got that surgery. But I mean, then they had to put Thurl Simon in, and I mean, that whole thing.
Yeah, but he's really good.
Yeah, he had the potential to be an amazing corner. You just didn't like him. You didn't like him because he was a knucklehead.
No, I actually didn't know anything about him being a knucklehead. I just never thought he was that good. And I remember Sherman praising him
Sherman said he was the next me.
Yeah, and
I watched him in practice.
Every time I saw him,
he was really good. But
in games, all I remember is him doing this. He was pushing off on me. He was pushing off on me. Every time he'd give up a play, he'd look to the ref.
Yeah, but he got worked by their receivers out there. They ran that little whip route on him. And Jeremy Lain that whole thing was.
That was brutal. And Cliff Averill got knocked out of that game. And then Brady starts making his comeback. I mean, I agree with John. That was, if it's possible for you to view that game objectively, just as nonpartisan, you're not a Seahawks fan, not a Pats fan. It was a pretty great game.
Well, CBSSports.com rated it number one out of all the Super Bowls.
I don't blame them. I mean, I despise the ending of it. But, removing your fandom, pretty compelling
game. I'm looking at the box score again from that game, and I know a lot of people have said this, but it's easy to forget about it since we focus on the last play. But the Seahawks did have a 10-point lead.
Yeah.
The defense had just held a little firmer there, then maybe it would have changed things too.
I believe if my guy Cliff didn't get knocked out of the game, they would have been able to win.
Yeah,
maybe. Bobby picked off Tom Brady in that game?
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that happen in that game. But, and then probably want to take a caller, but I was going to say Super Bowl 40, to me, the thing, I went back and looked at that. I remember going through the whole thing. They had held the Steelers. It was late in the first quarter. They had held them. It might have been the start of the second. I'll have to go back and look. But I think their offense had about 18 yards, total yards. And then they ran a reverse to Hines Ward, and whoever was on the backside, caved down and ran to the other side. And that reverse went for 20 yards, and Marquand Manuel came up to make the tackle and stepped on the first down marker and blew his groin out. And we were to Ettrick Pruitt, who was the third stringer because Ken Hamlin had gotten, beat up in that fight. And then you had Marquand Manuel, who was good, and they were killing him. There was like three and outs. They weren't doing anything.
Ben was terrible in that game. They won in spite of Roethlisberger in that game.
But, I mean, up to that point, they had nothing going, and the defense was looking dominant. And then now all of a sudden you're down to your third string safety.
Let's head to Tacoma. Joseph is with us. Hey, Joseph.
How you doing, guys?
Good, man. Which game do you got?
All right, so mine's kind of a tie between the Phoenix or the Cardinals and Steelers game. Which I thought was a great Super Bowl. And my second one was the Titans, and the Rams?
Yep.
So that one for me was really good because that was during my first tour of Iraq, and I woke up at 2 a.m., walked all the way across the base just to watch that game.
The ending of that can't be denied.
There was probably 100 of us in this room all dressed up, and we'd just stand there, and we were like 1 yard. Are you kidding? 1 yard?
Yeah. Yep. Joseph.
And just dived.
Yeah. It was that ending was unreal. Appreciate the phone call. And, of course, thank you for your service, Joseph. Yeah. I mean, we were just watching highlights of the Cardinals Steelers matchup. The pass to Santonio Holmes, Harrison with the return of that pick in the end zone, 100-yard return where he looked like he was running in slow motion. His tires were going flat as he was approaching the end zone. You're like, somebody's got to catch him, and here comes Larry Fitzgerald, who's got a bad hamstring. I remember that in that game. There were questions about whether he was going to play or not because he had a really bad hamstring, but he comes running, but he's got to avoid a little pile-up of players.
Coaches and players on the sidelines that he was running. But, I mean, I don't know. He did everything he could, and it was really close. That was the end of the half. If he had tackled him at the 1-foot line, it would have been go into the locker room.
Can you believe that?
But, I mean, the Steelers, that throw by Roethlisberger and the catch by Santonio Holmes.
It was brilliant. Much as I hate to say it, it was brilliant. That's another game where I was rooting for a team like they were my team. I was rooting so hard for the Cardinals.
Most all of us were here, weren't we?
I wasn't here at the time. Yeah. But, I loved Kurt Warner. I loved the Greatest Show on Turf. That was a fun team to watch.
Yeah, see, you were only 3 years removed from Seattle losing to the Steelers.
Oh, I hated them.
So the Steelers' hatred was still pretty strong.
It was percolating, yeah. A couple lines open, 421-3776, toll-free 866-979-3776. Let's head to Ording, bring in Tyson. Tyson, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, guys? So for me, it actually was originally the Steelers-Cardinals matchup. That was a big one that stuck out to me, but I've heard that come up. So just switching gears here, I think the next one that really sticks out to me with the Seahawks put aside would have to be the Eagles and the Patriots matchup going back. You know, just thinking of the talent that was on the field that game, you had Donovan McNabb versus Tom Brady. You had Deion Branch versus Terrell Owens, Corey Dillon versus Ryan Westbrook. I mean, the offensive firepower on both of those teams was absolutely undeniable.
Yeah, it was. I appreciate the phone call, Tyson. Yeah, I was at that one as well, and I remember just the conversations about going into that game, how, you know, or coming out of that game, you know, Terrell Owens putting up this superhuman effort, and he's got screws in the ankle. Remember, he got hurt a few games before the end of the season, and somehow he was given credit for the team getting to the Super Bowl. And I'm thinking, they get to the NFC title game every year without you. They got over the hump that year without you. He played in the game, and he played well, but him getting credit for them getting to the Super Bowl always bothered me.
That was so New England won 24-21. Donovan McNabb
threw up out on the field.
The quarterback for the Eagles. And I saw Andy Reid ask.
Yeah.
Andy Reid asked Donovan McNabb to come and speak to the Chiefs this week.
Some
Super Bowl experience there.
Well, also the tackle of Terrell Owens brought about one of the stupidest penalties ever.
Was that Roy Williams that made that tackle on him?
I have no idea. It was a horse collar tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
broke his ankle or whatever.
If he hadn't broken his ankle there, I don't think that we would. I think there'd still be legal horse collar tackles.
Would you like to hear the only thing I can remember from that game, Bob?
What's that?
That you
lost money on
that somehow? Well, it's along those lines. The Eagles got a backdoor score there to cover.
Did they?
Yeah, that's all I can remember.
So did you win?
Yeah, I think I had the Eagles in six or something like that or seven.
Okay, good. Let's see. Out to Bothell. Adam is here. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I got to go back 35 years to Super Bowl 20. I got to go back to the original swag of the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Richardson, Singletary, and Peyton. And I think about the star that Kobe was. And I think that originated that year with that team hitting the world stage. So I got to go to Super Bowl 20.
All right.
Boy, that might have been the best NFL defense ever.
Yeah, well.
Monsters of the Midway.
Yeah, you look at the Seahawks and what they're doing in more modernized football, I guess, you know. But yeah.
I think it's harder playing. It's got to be decidedly harder to play defense now.
Absolutely.
Than
yeah.
You couldn't get a first down against that Bears defense.
Yeah. No, they were really good. And you know what? I was going to say, of all of like the blowouts as far as a score goes, that one was probably the most enjoyable. 46-10, it wasn't much of a contest at all. But you know what I remember about that? I think somewhere I have a picture of Matt Millen, who was the linebacker for the Raiders, and the Patriots were a wild card team that year. And they went through and they beat the Raiders, who everybody thought it was going to be Raiders in Chicago in the Super Bowl. But there's a picture of Matt Millen just after he has punched their owner in the face.
The owner?
Or maybe it was a GM. I'm trying to remember who it was, but he went up and got in Matt Millen's face, and Matt Millen, I bet you if you look it up, it was in the L.A. Coliseum, and I think he came over and was like heckling him, and
wow,
he has like the follow-through look like, ooh, and you can kind of see the guy's face going.
Jeez.
And so anyway, the Patriots get in as underdogs. And
who was the quarterback of the Patriots, Sam? Was it Grogan?
Yeah, I think it was. The guy with the longest neck and yeah. NFL history, Steve Grogan, or the biggest Adam's apple maybe.
Yeah, maybe it was that. Let's see, University Place is where Lawrence is calling from. Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good, man.
Hey, so a couple things. First, I know a while back Jim was talking about the Super Bowl of with Joe Namath and guaranteeing they're going to win. I've been watching more of Peyton's Places on ESPN Plus. I don't know if you guys seen that. So watching that was was pretty cool. So getting to see that history, but I was gonna say my favorite Super Bowl was the Seahawks win, but since I can't say that, I will say something that brings me back to my childhood was actually watching Jake Delhomme play against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. I think that was 2004.
Yeah, that was the Janet Jackson one.
Yeah, I just remember Jake Delhomme and then I think Steve Smith. I can't remember the running back they had, but it was such a crazy it's just a crazy Super Bowl. I was actually outside playing basketball when the whole Janet Jackson thing happened, but yeah, it was a crazy Super Bowl.
you missed the best part.
Appreciate
the phone call, Lawrence.
Hoops at halftime.
You wouldn't have
it.
Seen it. I don't know anybody that was even watching the game that even realized what they saw on TV. There at the stadium, none of us had an idea. Yeah. Nobody had an idea that anything had happened.
I think I was just watching it with my wife. I think we ran it back and we're like, oh my gosh, did that really happen?
But at first, you're kind of, because it was not even a second.
Yeah.
So.
Is that Justin Timberlake?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Jake Delhomme was still the quarterback when the Seahawks beat him in the NFC Championship game in Seattle a couple of years later.
So, Bob, how would you describe the photo? Did I describe it well of Matt Mellon punching the GM?
Yeah, it's the follow through, and you just see the anger on Mellon's face, and you see the GM's head,
and like in the forefront of the picture is his fist.
Yeah, which is huge because it's in the foreground, so it looks massive, and he just looks like. He looks angry.
I saw Matt Mellon this preseason up in the booth when I did the preseason TV game, and he was up there, and he's such a nice guy. I was talking to him about it. I should have brought this up to him.
Isn't he the one who winked at you?
Yeah, he is.
Oh, when you, like, hey, kid, good for you.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff from you guys. We apologize to those of you hanging on the phone lines. We didn't get to your calls, but meanwhile, we got to get to this because Jim did some, and then as Maura or Linda wrote on the show sheet here in quotations, research. And it involves...
Only because Jim put quotes around it in his email.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to be blamed for that.
See, and
I was blaming Linda, not you.
I'm a little concerned because my research yesterday was a bit faulty, as pointed out by the 253.
Considered mentioning
that. Yeah. So, I mean, 425, if you question me today, that's fine, but 253, leave me alone.
All right. Jim's done some research, and it involves Ken Norton Jr. We're going to hear about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Research. Research is the key to this segment here. Jim Moore has done some research, in quotes, that he put there.
Yeah, I was busy this morning.
Yeah, so you did some research about the defense of the Seattle Seahawks team, or more specifically about Ken Norton Jr.?
Yeah, I was just sitting there thinking that we watched that Seahawks defense this year, and I just always, you know, you sit there and you hear about different players that you think are individually pretty good, and, mm-hmm. you know, we talk about Kendricks and Clowney, Bobby Wagner, Diggs when he came over, Shaquille Griffin having a good year, Quentin Jefferson. I mean, you could just go down the list of players that you thought had a pretty good year, and then every time I hear that, I'm thinking, well, collectively, they didn't really have a good year because they were 26th in total defense. They gave up 6 yards per play, and only the Texans and the Bengals had a worse yards per play, giving up 6.1. And so I mean, there's something wrong there, and I thought, well, maybe it's Ken Norton. And then as soon as I start thinking about Ken Norton and maybe they should get a new defensive coordinator, I always harken back to what Dave says and Danny and probably you too, Bob, where it's, you know, Pete Carroll's defense, not necessarily Ken Norton's. But I went back to Ken Norton. He's been a defensive coordinator for 5 years in the NFL, 3 with Oakland and 2 with Seattle. I thought, I wonder how he did in Oakland. And the numbers aren't really good for Ken Norton in Oakland. In 2015, his Oakland defense was 22nd in the league. 2016, they were 26th, last in the league in yards per play, 6.1. And in 2017, they were 23rd in total defense, tied for 27th in yards per play, 5.6. And so then I started going, okay, then when he came to Seattle in 2018, I looked at Seattle's defense before he got here. In 2017, the year before Norton got here, they were 11th in total defense. They gave up 20.8 points per game. And yet you could say, well, okay, they still had Cam Chancellor for 9 games. They still had Richard Sherman for 9 games. So part of it might be personnel related. If you're a Ken Norton supporter, you could say, well, they had better players then. Mm-hmm. And so it's out of Norton's control, some of these players that he didn't have to work with. But regardless of that, you look at the Seahawks in 2018, his first year as defensive coordinator, they were 16th in total defense, which is smack dab in the middle. That's average, and you would take that based on the way they were this year because they fell from 16th. So they went from 11th in 2017 to 16th in 2018, his first year as a defensive coordinator. His second year was this past year, 2019, 26th in total defense, and again, giving up 6 yards per play. And it just made me wonder.
And only Houston and Cincinnati worse?
Only Houston and Cincinnati. And you've gone from 2017, before he got here, giving up 20.8 points per game, to 21.7 in 2018, and then 24.9 this past season. So not a good trend at all. And I just wonder, you know, a lot of talk out there about Ken Norton and whether he should be coming back as a defensive coordinator, and I don't know if he will or not, but the numbers aren't good for Norton. And again, it might be just personnel related, but I just wonder about the coaching aspect of it too.
You know, it's interesting. I look at some of the numbers that are actually good. First of all, takeaway. Man, I hate this computer. Okay. I'm like Clayton with the Uber thing. Okay. But I'm looking at, you know, they were good at taking the ball away. So they ended up third during the regular season as far as a turnover ratio.
Especially with Diggs. It's 16 in the 5 games he played or something like that.
Yeah, they ended up with 28 takeaways. And then, well, if this thing would refresh for me. But anyway, they were third. But the other thing, too, opponent quarterback rating, they were ninth. Isn't that weird? Because they were second to last in sacks. And only Miami had less sacks than them.
Well, and then pass defense overall, pass yardage, they were 25th or 26th.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact that the quarterback rating was that low, and I don't know everything that goes into developing that rating, as we've talked about every year.
Make sure
we see it. But,
wonder.
Yeah, but we watch quarterbacks, I mean, Andy Dalton and the like, just pick them apart. So that number Matt feels job. Deceiving.
Yeah, it's 85, actually, and the best was New England with a 63. So, I mean, I think it also has to do with big plays. And that's one thing that the Seahawks were, you know, top 10 in also as far as limiting big plays. You look like explosive plays, and I know in here they do 20-plus and 40-plus passes that were given up. And, you know, the Seahawks gave up 6 40-plus and 53 20-plus passes. But, you know, there's lots of other teams that are worse than that. So that has a little bit to do with it. But, yeah, it's in the takeaways, I'm sure, you know, interceptions. They had 16 interceptions this year. But they just went long streaks without sacks, without takeaways. And it did seem to correspond with Diggs. I mean, when he played, they had good numbers.
How much of this, and we've gotten text in saying this is Pete's defense, Norton's influence isn't that big. That's what we always hear. It's Pete's defense. But we've seen it succeed. Now it had a different level of talent when Quinn was here and Gus Bradley was here and things like that. And you brought up even before that you know, you had a year where you had 9 games of Sherm and Cam before they got hurt. You had Bennett, you had Frank Clark. So certainly the level of talent is different. I don't think you can undersell that. I'm not trying to make excuses, but at the same time, we even heard it back then. This is Pete's defense, that it's not all Bradley. It's not all Quinn. It's Pete.
Yeah.
So
that goes back.
How true is that in your opinion?
Well, it goes back to, this came out probably 7-8 years ago, about the time we started doing this show. Rocky Seato, who, remember him? He was supposedly, and like he was like the keeper of Pete's defense. He left for the ministry, but it was interesting. But man, just a great guy, and really did a good job with. But he kind of was there in the USC days, and then with Pete, the way I understand it, and sort of just what worked, what didn't, how they, you know, played things each year against different kinds of, you know, and it's kind of interesting to look at like notes and, you know, of what you thought and the things that worked and didn't. And I know like John Schneider keeps a notebook like that, you know, where, you know, this is what we did. This is what we thought. This is what worked. Here's what didn't. And that's kind of where that came from. That Rocky Seato said, you know, I'm just the keeper. And, you know, he kind of called himself that. He wasn't the D coordinator, but, you know, they've had different defensive coordinators. And so I don't know how much you – it just depends on how much you believe that Ken Norton and Pete Carroll are meeting. Like, are they doing it every week? Are they putting the game plan together? Mm-hmm. Are they doing that together? Or is he just saying, look, it's yours, Kenny, do whatever you want to do? But those numbers are kind of interesting, you know, that he just hasn't had that. But is it, as you call it, loft?
Loft.
Yeah. Lack of
flipping talent.
Talent.
Loft. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. You know, Dave, I mean, you talk about it too. I mean, you're looking at the film, and I just wonder sometimes, you know, where you're a little, you know, surprised at how things are going out there. So I don't know. It's just weird to me, and I think it is to a lot of Seahawk fans to see a Seahawk defense like the one that we saw this year. And if it weren't for those takeaways, and we saw at the end of the season what it was like, because I think they went the last three or four games without getting one, and not going so well.
Well,
although again, you go back to, and Dave talks about it, record-wise, they were still solid.
Yeah, they found a way to win 11 games, and I don't, you know, we can debate luck, and boy, if that play had gone this direction or if that one thing changed, you're looking at a different result. I don't think Norton's above reproach, certainly, because, listen, when Bevel was here, he got blamed for every single thing that did not work offensively. Mm-hmm. It was all Bevel. He's an idiot. They've won in spite of him. And I feel like we're kind of getting to that point with Norton.
Well, it's kind of funny to me because like Greg Rosenthal from NFL Network, I think he wrote 32. He had all 32 teams and or 31 teams and what they could do. Maybe it was just the 16 in the NFC, how you can catch the 49ers next year. And it was, you know, they need to replace Schottenheimer or they need to replace the philosophy. And yet it always seems like the offensive coordinator, like you're saying, he comes up a lot more than the defensive guy.
All right, we're going to come back, and this is going to be stunning news to everybody out there, but Richard Sherman has a beef with the media again. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
I remember what I said, rinse my mouth out.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle in stunning, stunning news. Richard Sherman has an issue with the media. Right. This is just
what's it got to do with this time?
This is about the idea of a 17-game season. So we've got his remarks, and then we'll play Mike Florio, who took exception to him from Pro Football Talk. So here's what Richard Sherman had to say about the media and the idea of a 17-game season.
Players have been more aware of player safety and longevity and just life after football. The league, you know, kind of pretends that they're interested in it, pretends that they care about it, you know, makes all these rules, fines all these players, but then still proposes to players to play an extra game and not just 17. They're really just saying 17 so that they can get to 18. And so that's two more opportunities for players to risk their bodies, to put their bodies on the line. And that's what's so ridiculous about it. And nobody calls them out. Nobody calls out the hypocrisy. And I'm hoping that one day, you know, people will be brave enough to call out the hypocrisy of saying, hey, we really care about player safety, but hey, we also want you to play an extra game, put your body on the line and risk your career.
It's the first time I've heard the 18 number, but I don't disagree. I brought this up the other day.
That's the goal of the league?
That it's going to always get bigger. I brought this up the other day about like what Mike Blowers was saying, you know, when they were like, why don't they expand the roster, the game day roster, and what was it, 25?
Yeah, where do you stop?
Went to 26, why not 27, why not 28, why not 30? You know, so I mean, it just, yeah, it's going to get to a point where I guess you get diminishing returns, and I guess it'll continue to go. You know what one thing there that really strikes a chord with me and that bothers me is when he says something about us players in our post-football life. Like, it's a fair exchange, man. You're getting, like, I don't care about that. And don't be surprised if people don't care about you.
You're talking about his health in his post-football
life?
Yeah,
I mean, it's almost like he wants people to feel sorry for him or something that, you know, we need to, you know, we're real people too and all this. I mean, look, man, if you don't want to play, don't play. But if you play football, you're probably going to have some health problems, okay? So, and you know, everybody takes the appropriate risk that they want, the risk-reward, and I just, to me, that just struck a chord with me. Like, do you want sympathy? You want sympathy for being a football player?
Yeah, nobody's making them play football.
No.
You're living a lifestyle that we dream of, right?
Yeah.
That none of us can relate to or imagine. You're making money that none of us will ever even come close to sniffing.
Right.
Yet, you're right. There is a level of, hey, feel bad for us. You don't know what happens to us. It is the fair exchange. You're assuming a certain level of risk in exchange for a lifestyle.
You're getting paid handsomely. Plus
they're adding a 17th game, but they're factoring that in. They're going to be paid more for
They're not doing that just out of
game.
The kindness of their heart. They will be compensated financially for
that. And if I understand it right, I think they're talking about adding the 17th game and then taking away two of the preseason games, and you just have two instead of four, and you'd have a scrimmage with another team too.
Yeah, but the idea is that the starters rarely play in those games, so they're going to be exposed to more trauma on the body in a regular season game versus, okay, yeah, you're taking away those games, but we play, what, a series in one, and maybe two series in another, or a half of football at best, or who knows.
But the typical guy, if you said, hey, we're going to give you an extra $250,000 in your contract if you play that 17th game, wouldn't he sign up for that?
Yeah, he would, and I don't think he's speaking for everybody. You know, the rank and file NFL guys may feel totally different than a guy who makes, what does he make, 10, 12 million, he's made all of his money, and now all of a sudden, you know, there's some guys that are trying to get to a certain point, and they wouldn't mind playing an extra game. So, yeah, that just bothered me. And, you know, same thing, like, well, what about us as people? Well, quite frankly, Richard and anybody else, I don't think I would be paying any attention to you if you weren't playing football.
Right.
You know, you would just be a regular guy unless you wanted to go and, you know, be Stephen A. Smith or anything. But I mean,
yeah,
why?
Right.
Why is there all this talk about that? Why don't you're a football player? Okay, you're not some special entertainer or anything about you other than that you can tackle and catch.
Don't you also find it interesting that he uses the word hypocrisy? But he's constantly calling out the media. But is there any other player out there that uses the media to get their messages that they want out there more?
Yeah,
no, he's
That's
you're
a good
right.
Point.
He's yeah. I think I'm in lockstep with you on this. I don't disagree that the league is probably wanting to push to 18 eventually, and who knows, maybe 50 years from now they're looking at a 20 game season, or who knows what's going to happen. But yeah, the idea of trying to engender some level of sympathy from people, like, hey, we're people too, man. It's like, man, you don't understand your position in life. I think you've sort of lost what it is to be.
He always makes it sound like he's getting taken advantage of.
Yeah, that somehow he's a victim. They're a victim on some level. I'm like, wait a minute, should we compare bank accounts? Should we compare who's got a certain future versus who does not, and who's living a certain lifestyle that, again, is something you see in movies that we don't even aspire to reach? You dream about it. You're like, man, I can't even imagine what it'd be like to never have a financial concern. That's 99% of anybody's concern in life are financial concerns. And that's been eliminated. That's off your plate. So now what are you angry about? Yeah. So here's Mike Florio, by the way, of Pro Football Talk, responding to these comments from Sherman.
Hey, look, I got a ton of respect for Richard Sherman as a player, but when he says things like that, it makes my blood boil.
Well, it makes me too.
We've been talking for years about the disconnect between playing more football and preserving and enhancing player health and safety. Of course, it's hypocritical.
Yeah.
It's obviously hypocritical.
I don't
act like we don't have the courage to talk about it.
I know.
We talk about it. Don't shame us. Here's the problem. I'm getting mad.
Yeah, go ahead. I like it.
Here's
go ahead.
The problem.
Get them.
The union is negotiating based on 17 games.
Right.
That ship has sailed.
Right.
How are we supposed to take up the fight about the hypocrisy of playing 17 games when they're negotiating based on 17 games? If you guys don't want to play 17 games, you tell the NFL, stick it where the sun don't shine. It's 16 and that's it. And if you want to lock us out over it, lock us out over it. Then you'll have us even waving that flag harder of hypocrisy. But how can you say we don't have the courage to call out the hypocrisy when you are negotiating based on 17 games?
Ooh, it's pretty good. It's a pretty strong position. He's right.
I know this is rich of me, but the other host there.
Shh.
Jesus. Yeah. Yeah.
Get him.
Yeah. Anyway, I probably do that too.
We all do at one point or another.
Oh, but can we get some violin music for this text here?
What's that?
Yeah. The 206. I feel sympathy for anyone who gets hurt in exchange for my viewing pleasure. Why do you get pleasure out of watching people get hurt? Dave, would you rather have $1 million in the bank or not have brain damage? Sounds like maybe you should watch soccer.
trying to do my Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah.
Maybe you should go watch soccer.
Again, you say it all the time. You know what you're signing up for. It's an exchange. You are assuming this risk. You understand there is a lot of risk attached to this profession. In exchange for that risk, here's what you can make. Here's the life you could live. Everybody understand, if you're going to be a fireman, there's a lot of risk in that job, and I respect those guys. But they understand what the pay is and what the risk is, and to them, it's worth it.
Right.
And I respect it. But if they're going to come out and go, well, I didn't know I was going to have to go through that. You know, I didn't know it was going to entail this. Nobody cares about me.
Well, like, and some guys do check out, you know, like this Chris Borland guy. He's like, yeah, it's not worth it to me.
Yeah,
I could make millions of dollars, and I'm stepping away from
Keekly
it.
Keekly has just made that decision. Now, he's already made generational money, but you still walked away from it. So everybody's different. Everybody has a choice. Nobody's forcing this life upon you. You have a choice. And I agree with you. I brought up the waiver thing a long time ago. We've talked about concussions, and I don't think it's all nonsense by any stretch. I think it's absolute. There's science that backs it up. But people are still going to play this game. They're going to play the game. Sign a waiver that says, I understand. I am assuming
not going to come back
all these risks. I'm not going to sue you. I understand that this is a potential end to my career. This is something that could happen. But in exchange, I'm going to make millions of dollars and be treated like a king and going to be worshipped by all corners of the country and the world in some cases. This is the exchange that goes on.
Do you think if you told Richard Sherman what you just said right there, that he would go, yeah, you know what? You're probably right.
No. I don't know that he's ever said that.
I don't think he has.
I don't know that those words have ever come out of his mouth. So we'll see what goes on. But I think Florio had a great point. You guys are negotiating based on 17 games. If that's a non-starter, if you are truly that concerned about your health and you think 17 games is way too detrimental, then why would you even entertain it? Why wouldn't you say to the owners, no. Sorry, that's a non-starter. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. We're drawing the line in the sand right here. Sorry. You know, he's absolutely right there. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk more football. The professor, John Clayton, will be joining us live from Miami when we come back with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
Man, we know so much stuff. It's amazing what you get on this show. What did we learn today, Maura?
We learned that I have a new name.
By the way, our producer's name is Maura.
What did I say?
No, somebody texted and says, I can't tell if Linda is describing Broncos fans or Huskies fans.
Ooh.
That's Maura, 206.
Okay.
I like the comment, though.
That's an interesting comparison.
Yeah. That's a good comment.
Jim likes that, except for the Linda part of it. How did you feel about being referred to as Linda?
You know what I thought was funny is they texted back and said, oh, yeah, I meant Maura. I was like, no, you meant Lydia is what you meant.
Lydia. Okay, I was wondering how he came up with Linda.
It's fine.
Maura. When I said Linda, I meant Maura.
You know what's funny? I remember watching a show at one point, and I thought it was a good point that they brought up, that it's one of those names that you're like, you only ever expect someone to be an adult. Like, you were a baby Linda?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a little kid name.
There's certain names like that. You just can't picture that as a child's name.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're right.
How about Frank?
Yeah. Frank.
It's my dog's name.
It's a dog.
It's a great name for a dog.
Frank. Yeah.
He loves it. What else did we learn?
We learned that Jim was a bit more excited to hear from Gardner Minshew than others.
He was right.
I don't remember all those Super Bowls either.
He was the best rookie quarterback this year, but he felt bad about saying it, and so he came off of that today. And it's always good to hear from Gardner Minshew, though, isn't it, Bob?
Is that actual time on the pause there?
I actually cut a little bit of it out when I added the cricket.
No. Wow. What was so funny about that?
It was really funny.
It just seemed poor teammate.
Was he the best rookie? Was he better than Kyler Murray?
If you look at the stats, or if you look at the wins and losses.
All right.
How many games did he start?
I don't know, 10 or 12, something like that.
How many wins did he have?
I think he was a .500 quarterback.
You might say that I should know this because I'm a sports radio guy, but I don't care. Gardner Minshew. You also care enough.
Shouldn't Gardner Minshew think that? Shouldn't he think that he's the best rookie quarterback? Shouldn't any competitor that's in the NFL?
Yeah, but
what are you?
Maybe you don't verbalize it.
No, actually.
Maybe it's not good to verbalize it as a rookie.
Right. Yeah. So he backed off of it.
Yeah, I'm sure most rookies come in feeling like they're the best and they're going to revolutionize their position and they're going to bring this team to prominence. you don't verbalize it.
Boy, I sure as hell didn't.
No.
When I came in. I was like, I'm just going to shut up and try to learn something here for you.
Going, I just want a job. Just let me survive. Don't cut me.
I was kind of surprised he backed down, though. It doesn't seem like, you know, he's got kind of a flashy personality. I thought he would stand by it.
Yeah. Flashy and arrogant are two different things.
True.
Is he still taking his RV trip across the nation?
I think he finished that up.
Yeah. He's at the Super Bowl now.
Oh.
So maybe he ended it there.
Oh, is he on Radio Row doing interviews?
He's been out doing some interviews.
Seeing jean shorts and a whole getup?
He was in something.
He had the headband on.
Weird.
Did he?
Yeah. Can I admit something to you guys, though? If I'm you, I'm probably sick of hearing about Gardner Minshew from me.
No.
Yeah, I think.
We can't get enough, Jim.
I can.
Never gets old.
I can see your point there.
What else did we learn?
We learned that we are not special when it comes to John's transportation complaints.
Clayton, is that making you feel better to complain to us about the traveling? Because if it is, we're here for you.
No, it's not you. I'm complaining to everybody.
Oh, okay.
I mean, league people, other writers, I mean, broadcasters.
I'm sure they're.
John, you need to get...
You're just included in the mix.
Glad to be a part of that group. Tell you what.
Has he complained to every show? About his Uber trips,
I do believe,
and whatnot.
It's been well covered.
He said even other reporters and league people, anyone who will listen. I just love that he admits that. Oh, no, I'm complaining to every single person I see. I want it known.
Well, then we heard the child crying in the background. He said that was somebody complaining about the transportation.
He said that
was
one of his coworkers. Yeah, there was one time where I called into his show, and I didn't really feel like talking that much. So in the beginning of the interview, I asked him how his trip back from Green Bay was.
And then
sucked up like 5 minutes of the segment.
Knowing that everyone had had a hassle with the snowstorm and everything, you're like, oh, this will take up some time.
Particularly Clayton, though. Clayton's his is always worse.
Dave didn't tell you. He put the phone down, went and used the bathroom, made a sandwich, came back. John was still talking. It was great. It was great.
We still can't figure out why that lifetime mileage membership is worth it.
I don't want to ask that question
again.
Seems
like a lot of complicated travel.
There's certain questions you ask John where he gives you an answer and you walk away going, I don't feel like I know any more than I did before the question was asked. But did we learn anything else?
Nope, that's it. Well, we learned a lot about past Super Bowls today.
We did.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I love that talk. I mean, we could do it tomorrow. I could still. And you know, the one that popped up that was probably my favorite of the day was the picture of Matt Mellon punching the
GM
such
a good picture.
From the Patriots.
That's a great picture. I want to see if there's video. I'd love to see video of that. But they caught it on the follow through. It was just the look on his face versus the face that's being punched. Decidedly different. It's very good stuff. All right. That does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, John Clayton and Joe Fan, our buddy from NBC Sports Northwest. If you missed any of that, head to the podcast page at 710sports.com. Click the podcast button. Then just click on our picture, and everything you missed each and every day is waiting for you right there. We're going to be back with you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.